Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Topically Yours on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. As always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. Well, you know, in November of this year, city council elections will be held and many candidates will be running for seats in the district. Zed Ramadan, who after years of serving on his local community board, is running for the city council for the 7th District's city council seat, which is currently occupied by Robert Jackson, who made a name for himself when in 1991 as a Community School Board 6 president, Robert and Community Board 6 attorney Michael Rebell founded the Campaign for Fiscal Equality. And with Robert as lead plaintiff, the Campaign for Fiscal Equality successfully sued the state of New York for failing to properly fund New York City public schools. Since Mr. Jackson is currently running for Manhattan Borough President, his city council seat has become available. Kuwaiti-born Ramadan feels certain he is the right candidate for the council seat. And we're going to talk to Zed Ramadan today and find out a little bit about him, what his platform is, his plans for the Washington Heights, Hamilton Heights, Manhattanville, and parts of the Upper West Side communities. So why don't we welcome him to the show? Welcome, Zed Ramadan.
Thank you, Deirdre. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening.
Now, am I pronouncing your first name correctly?
Zed Ramadan. Zed. So it's phonetic, just the way it's spelled, Z-E-A-D. And it's just like saying Z minus, Zed.
And Ramadan, isn't that a big holiday?
It's actually the 9th month of the Islamic calendar, and it's funny, I always thought it was a funny name until I came into the, you know, to the consciousness that, you know, it's a month. And then I realized I also had friends named April and May and June, and I got some Latino friends named Julio and Augustus and Augustine, so I started thinking that I was pretty normal after that.
Exactly.
After thinking
I
was very unique all my life.
I had no idea that it was actually, it means month?
It's actually the name of a month. So they have different names for the different months in the Islamic calendar. They have different names for different months in the Jewish calendar and then the Christian calendar or the Napoleonic calendar. So it happens to be the 9th month of the Islamic calendar.
Is that a month of fasting?
That is the month of fasting. So the reason why it's the month of fasting is that's the month in which the Prophet Muhammad received the revelation prophetic to be a prophet. And so that's the month that people fast in order to cleanse themselves of their vices and to become better human beings and to practice piety.
Can't ask for better than that, now can you?
Hey, if we could all be more pious, that would be a wonderful world we'd live in, wouldn't it?
It would be. It definitely would be. Well, I want to ask you, though, in your opinion, what is the role of the city council?
Well, the city is divided into about 51 sections, so there's 51 council members to the New York City Council. It's basically like the little parliament for New York City, or the little Congress, maybe, of New York City. And so each councilmatic district contains, I think, a minimum of like 157,000 people to about 168,000 people. The district, the 7th councilmatic district, looks like it might end up with about 161,000 people in its district. And it would actually be one of the smaller populated districts in the borough of Manhattan, where everybody else, the other 9 districts in the borough, would have somewhere in the range of 165,000 people. But that's not a big deal. The most important thing is that the district is a very diverse district. It's very rich in history and culture. And those things we want to preserve, but there are also many needs having to do whether it be affordable housing or really education. You know, I'm big on education, and obviously there's a tremendous need for jobs in the district.
Well,
so there's lots of needs for the district, but it has lots of beautiful things about it that make it so special in West Harlem and Morningside Heights and Lower Washington Heights and so on.
Well, I mentioned that it was Morningside Heights and Hamilton Heights. This is pretty much a large Hispanic population, correct?
It has a large. Mm-hmm. So this is a district that seems like, now remember, we have not, this is the current 7th district runs from the northern tip of Manhattan in the Inwood area down to approximately 122nd Street and going from the Hudson River towards Broadway. And when it gets lower into Harlem, it starts moving towards Edgecombe Avenue. And the projected new district is going to look extremely different. Now, listen closely. This is really interesting. Instead of being a really long district that started at 228th Street in Manhattan and went down to 122nd, now the new district looks like it's going to be on the northern end. It's going to be at 165th Street. This is what is projected. This is what people think it's going to look like because it has not been made official by the city of New York. So 165th Street on the northern end, down to about 97th Street on the southern end, and it'll go from Central Park West maybe on 110th Street and then kind of angles in towards St. Nicholas and Amsterdam and Edgecombe and kind of does that up to Edgecombe Avenue and 165th Street. So it encompasses
some of Harlem.
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly Western Harlem, Morningside Heights, Hamilton Heights, part of the upper West Side, and then you've got the lower section of Washington Heights.
Nice.
It's a very diverse district.
Very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually I looked it up. Council members have a significant say about the growth and development of the city.
Absolutely.
What areas of housing, urban renewal, and community development would you address in your district? Because you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, I think the most needy. I think that we have a lot of public housing in the NYCHA run public housing in the district. There's the Grant houses, there's the Douglas houses, and so on. And these buildings are fairly old. They go back to the 60s and they're huge buildings with, many stories. And I just think that the buildings need so many services. They need to be upkept. And I think the services to these facilities must be made much more readily available than they are right now. Some people got to wait like a year for some services to come to them. I actually know of a friend who lives in the Grant houses that has a broken window that is cracked by about 6 inches during this cold weather dating back to November. and they had a date of like January 26th when they were going to come fix it. So she's had to bear, you know, the whole month of December and the whole month of January to try to get that window fixed. Now, with that kind of service, I think it's a little inhumane to have to put somebody to have, you know, through that cold weather. I really think that NYCHA has to recreate their system, re-engineer their process for responding to services in those, you know, in our communities. And I think that that's vital. But affordable housing is something that's more. See, the term affordable housing, affordable to who? You know, nobody's building. Yeah, no one's. It's income targeted housing is the way we should phrase it, because affordable housing is only you can put those words in quotes, and it may be affordable to the upper class or to the middle class, but nobody's building any condos or co-ops or even apartments that are rentable for under $1,500, $2,000 a month for the rental end of it, and nobody's building any condos or co-ops that are being sold for under $350, $400, $500. Now, who can afford that these days, especially in the neighborhoods that we talked about in the 7th District? You know,
you're talking about people having to pay thousands in rent a month.
Yeah, and it's just inconceivable and unrealistic, you know. And so, you have to remember...
Especially right now when people don't have work.
Yeah, and you have to remember, these are the same people that struggled through all the difficult eras of the 70s and 80s and 90s, through the heroin eras and the crack eras and the violence and all that. And now they're being, you know, nudged out because landlords are increasing their rents at a rate that's higher than the rate of inflation. And other people are coming in trying to vie for their apartments because they can't afford the apartments downtown. The diversity, I mean, it's becoming more diverse, the community, but I think that the people who struggled through all the difficult times are now suffering the pain of not being able to afford housing, and that's a tragedy that has to be amended.
Well, I just heard that I won't mention her name, a rather famous singer, is being evicted because she can't afford the $12,000 rent a month, and I thought, wow, $12,000 a month?
Well, she could live in our neighborhood if she could afford $12,000 a month. You know, she could live in a lot of neighborhoods if she can afford $12,000 a month. You'll have to forgive me if I don't have too much sympathy for someone who can't pay $12,000 a month. I mean, I think you can get a tremendous apartment in most of New York City for if you're going to pay that kind of money. You know, but I'm concerned about the people who can't pay. I'm concerned about the seniors, right? Because their retirement benefits, right? But their retirement benefits, if the rent goes up for $40 or $60 a month, right? Their retirement benefits aren't increasing with the rent. They're staying the same, you know?
Yeah, but it seems decision after decision is always made in the landlord's favor.
Always, and that's a tragedy. And that's a tragedy. I really think that we need to have someone in there who's going to stand up for the people, that does not negotiate the best interest of the community. And whether it be for housing, seniors' interests, like, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I met a woman in a building that I live in. She said, I get about $1,200 a month from the government, and my rent is about $850. And I says, man, that leaves you with about, you know, $350 left, and you got to live on $350 for the rest of the month? She goes, yeah, and my rent is going to increase, so just think about it, $350 minus whatever it increases by, so I'll be down to $310, or I'll be down to $290, and $290 for the entire rest of a month. And how would you like your grandmother to live on $290 a month? You know, if you multiply that by the year, yeah, you're talking about somebody trying to survive on $4,000 or $3,000 a year. That is just outrageous. That's outrageous. That's poverty. That's below poverty.
Exactly.
And that's what the reality that our seniors and that our low-income families and people who are unemployed, and right now because the economy is so hard, there's so many people who are unemployed. It is such a tragedy. We got to create jobs. We've got to figure out ways to get people employed in our community. And we got to stop this vicious cycle of having to depend on affordable housing. We got to elevate our community to another level where the children are educated and they have a chance. They have a chance to live a better life than their parents lived, because every parent in the world wants their children to have an easier life than they did. And if we don't do that, if we don't plant the seed and start working towards that by making sure that our children get the best education possible, right, and all throughout the district, because we've got some great schools in the upper West Side, but then we have schools that are not performing well more inside the district in Hamilton Heights, you know.
Well, what is that exactly? What is going on with the schooling system that it seems like it's dumbing down, and they're closing public schools right and left?
You know, the Bloomberg administration seems to think that the public school system and the teachers are to blame, and the children aren't progressing at a good enough rate. Look, if we have dedicated teachers who've been given their life to the public school system, and they've been given the right tools and the right facilities, right, and proper facilities that are updated, because when you go to independent schools, when you go to charter schools, you're playing with a different stack of cards, okay? People have, you know, more beautiful facilities, more modern technology, right, and facilities that are updated. So you're surrounded by more modern techniques and technologies, and I think that's essential, because I think that the way that they're teaching our children these days is a tad outdated. Because if you go to independent schools, right, I don't understand why the New York City public school system doesn't go to the best performing schools in New York City, and they say, we want to see how you're doing this, because for some reason, you know, your kids seem to be excelling and our kids are not excelling. So they really have to take a creative approach and a realistic approach and recognize that maybe the way that the Board of Education is dealing with the situation is not effective. And they have to look at other successful ventures, other schooling systems that say, look, we've been very, very successful. Our kids are excelling. You know, they're exceeding their grade limit, their grades in math and science, but you also have to enhance their studies with the arts. You know, we can't just say we're making you guys all out to be engineers or something. We need to enhance their studies, make it more diverse with the arts, the history, mm-hmm. and the history has to be diverse too. It can't just be European history. We can't have
exactly.
our community is predominantly a community of color. And if you don't teach kids
Absolutely.
About their heritage, you know, if we can't teach our children about their heritage, then their self-esteem won't be as profound and as powerful as a European kid's. And I think that's very, very essential to give children their pride, to give them hope, that saying, you know, everyone, you know, from where you come from, comes greatness, and where you come from, comes greatness, and where you come from, comes greatness, and all of you could be great. But I think that the history books teach us that where you come from comes greatness, and you guys had it tough.
Well,
you guys had it tough.
Well, the history books don't even mention other people's culture and other people's greatness. They basically
exactly.
focus on the European as if others haven't done anything.
You got it. So I think it was very important is to create equity. You know, equity. What we have in the successful part of the community, we should have in the other parts of the community that are less successful, and we should replicate those programs if they are successful in the places that are less successful to ensure that our children are getting the best kind of education and an equal education everywhere.
Well, you mentioned supporting the arts, and the arts have often been very instrumental in giving people interest or bringing them back to something that they can get involved in and be interested in. Because a lot of people say that the school system is just not interesting to them. They're not
motivated.
Right.
You know, I have a tremendous passion for the arts. I'm the co-founder of the Northern Manhattan Arts Alliance, and we just won the National Endowment of the Arts Award, and we won 3 Union Square Awards for providing services and support for the artists and arts organizations of Northern Manhattan. And we've given out over $400,000 in grants to artists and art groups in Northern Manhattan. And I'm very proud to have created, to have helped create one of the most effective umbrella organizations in the arts, some people think in the country, for a small community. And I'm very proud of that. I was also the vice chair of the Cultural Affairs Committee at the Upper Manhattan Empowerment Zone. And what we did was we invested into the historic cultural institutions of our community. And we also looked at, you know, budding arts organizations that we thought we can help propel into greatness into the future, such as the Classical Theater of Harlem, the Harlem School of the Arts, Museo del Barrio, and other, you know, Taino, and other Latino arts organizations, and African and Harlem-based arts organizations, and NOMA. And we helped create NOMA as well. And we also funded the Malcolm X and Dr. Beja Baz Center to help them open up and create an infrastructure as well, where I'm the founding chair. But so as you can see, I really believe that the arts create a really wonderful spirit in the community and a wonderful pride. And I think it's essential to help the artists of a community. I think it's also essential to make sure that artists stay in the community and don't feel they have to leave because there aren't enough galleries and there isn't much appreciation. And I think we have to connect the art with business. So restaurants and institutions should open up their doors to artists to allow them to come inside to show their art, to sell their art, and really help them prosper so they could build the art industry in the community. And that's something that I really am looking forward to doing in the 7th District.
Well, is that part of your, I know you have an interest in economic empowerment. What you just mentioned, is that part of your what you want to do in terms of economic empowerment? Because I know that's a major theme of yours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I have it's funny, I'm really passionate about protecting the housing and seniors, and I'm really passionate about education because education is going to be where the future growth of our community comes from, absolutely. But I got to tell you, if we don't help our adults get jobs and if we don't create jobs in our community, then, you know, they need to be proud of what they're doing in their lives in order to turn around and help their kids. Because if they're spiraling with negativity because they're unemployed, or they can't pay their rent, I got to tell you, that's going to take priority, because what people don't want to end up is in a homeless shelter. And so you've got these really proud people who are unemployed and they'd love to help their children, but they're looking at the big S word, and that ain't Superman, it's survival. You know, and I think that if we put people in a situation where it's about survival, then it's going to be very, very hard, no matter what we do in education, to ensure that the next generation exceeds the economic, the socioeconomic status of their parents. So it's essential that we create jobs. It's essential that we create training programs. So no local institutions have any excuses for saying, oh, we're hiring from elsewhere because around here there aren't enough qualified people. Well, I think that institutions, and whether it's those institutions or just taking our workforce, the available workforce, and training them in order to make them viable applicants for jobs, right, and getting income coming into our community, I think that's most important. Because what we don't want, I always think about dollar signs flying out and dollar signs flying in. I want dollar signs flying into the community, and I want dollar signs to stay and grow in our community. I don't want dollar signs to leave. I think we got to get developers who are from our community. I think union folks who are unemployed should be looked at first when there's development projects in our community. I think we need training programs for our community. And I think that that's the only way that we're going to raise the quality of life and the standard of living in our community, which is going to have an effect on the quality of education in our community, because those parents will be proud, hardworking, and they'll know that they have to teach their kids to take it to another level.
Well, the other problem that people have is medical. I mean, I know somebody that works for Healthcare Plus, and you have to practically make $200 a week to qualify, and most people make a little more than that. So there's a whole bunch of people that can't even afford medical.
Right, and I think that's another issue. You know, if we can't take care of ourselves, then we can't work. And if we can't work, we can't make money and pay our bills. And if we can't make money and pay our bills, we start to spiral. And if we spiral, it's going to affect the rest of the family. It's going to affect the children. So as you see, I mean, and you know, the comment, you know, like, if all goes well, bar illness, right? Because we all know that if there's an illness, everything hits the brakes, right? Your whole life sort of hits the brakes. It's just about how do you get better. So if we can't ensure that our community is given the proper attention, right, whether it be the seniors, and ensuring that Medicare is always there for them, ensuring that any kind of health-related issue is addressed. One thing we are blessed with in northern Manhattan is we have more hospitals than probably anywhere in New York City, and more big hospitals like Harlem Hospital, like St. Luke's, like Columbia Presbyterian, NYPH. So we have a lot of hospitals. And we also have a tremendous amount of senior centers, and we just have to make sure that those programs to take care of our seniors, to make sure that our youth are given proper medical attention. Those things are vital, because once anybody gets sick, then everything hits the brakes in the family. And so we got to make sure that health plans are available, that are viable, that are affordable for our families.
And also, New York City is starting to see more homeless people than they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. How can that be addressed?
The only way it's going to be addressed, I just met a young man 2 days ago. His name was Andre, and I was handing out, my leaflets at a subway station, and he was handing out AM newspaper, and he was this, like, bright-eyed, bushy-tail. It was like 6:30 in the morning, bright-eyed, bushy-tail. Good morning, here you are, AM newspaper, ladies and gentlemen. He was, like, just extremely eloquent, extremely friendly, and he was all peppy, and I said, man, if I owned a business and I had somebody like this behind the counter, man, that would be a very successful business, because he's such a wonderful person, right? Or, if this guy owned a business, forget it. He would be over the top, because he's such a wonderful, alluring person, because he was so genuinely happy and friendly. And I said to him, Andre, man, what's your story? And he said to me, I said, where do you live? He said, I live in Brownsville. I said, where? He goes, in a homeless shelter. And I said, you're homeless? You have a family? He goes, yeah, I have a wife and 4 kids, 2, 3, 5, and 7. And I said, wait a minute, you work here? He said, I work here 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. He works 15 hours a day, making $8 an hour. And I said to him, are you looking for work? He says, yeah, but I feel blessed that I have anything at all. Let me tell you, man, I used to live in an apartment, and I don't have an apartment anymore, and I'm homeless. But I got other brothers and other sisters, man, that they're in the homeless shelter, and they got educations. He's like, they went to college. I couldn't believe my ears. And he's telling me this stuff.
Everywhere.
Yeah. So that's the thing. That's the thing. Homeless, the economy has really beaten down the population. But who springs back first? The people who spring back first are the rich. And the second that are going to be taken care of is the middle class. And the people who are forgotten.
Look how they're raising transportation. 50 cents.
Got it.
That means something to people. Why are they raising prices right now when people can barely afford to live?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't think that they make any possible policy. I don't think that enough policies address the most needy in our community, and I think that's a tragedy. Look at all the tolls coming into New York City. You think you're going to an amusement park, paying $12 to come into Manhattan. Yeah. And then you got to pay, and if you can park in a parking lot, you can't pay downtown under $30, $35 for parking space. In one of these parking lots. So you just think that you're going to some kind of Broadway show, and you're just driving down the street of Manhattan, coming over the George Washington Bridge or the Verrazano. It's just a tremendous amount of money. And every time they do that, it's taxing. And I think that the model that has been created by this administration is, let's tax small business, let's tax the small guy, and just take a little bit out of his pocket, but take it out of all of their pockets. And the only people who can really afford that without a hitch are the rich and the upper and the upper middle class. And the rest of us, we get a ticket for $115. That hurts. It feels like somebody kicks you in the belly. That's a whole day's, whole 2 days, whole 3 days profit for a lot of people. you know?
Well, there's too many politicians that are rich. And you have too many politicians that are rich and they don't have an understanding of what it's like to even be middle class.
Now, let me tell you something. I'm an immigrant. I'm an immigrant. I came to this country when I was 5 years old. I'm Palestinian. I'm Kuwaiti born, and I grew up in Washington Heights, and that's where we landed when we came to this country. And, you know, my parents were refugees, and they were illiterate. And I'll be honest with you, you know, we grew up on welfare. There was eight of us, and we grew up in apartment tenements, and so I know how it feels. And I know that, you know, if you haven't experienced the suffering of being poverty-stricken, it's very hard to kind of think that you can feel how hard it is, you know, for people. And I wouldn't give that experience away. I mean, this is not an experience anybody wishes they had, but I have to tell you that I wouldn't give that experience. I wouldn't go back and change anything because it's made me the person who I am. And I'd love giving back to my people. I love giving back to my Northern Manhattan community that gave me the opportunity to try to do better than my parents did, and that's what I want for every child in the 7th District. I want to try to work hard to give them the opportunities to have a more successful life, to have jobs, to have training, to have college educations, and I just want to see the 7th District flourish.
Well, we're running out of time, so I want to know, how can people who want to support you find you, and do you have a website, or how can they join your team, or...
Yes, if you go to info, that's I-N-F-O, at ZiadRamadan2013.com. That's I-N-F, like Frank, O, at Z-E-A-D, like David, R-A-M, like Mary, A-D, like David, A-N, like Nicholas, 2013, like the year, .com. If you go there and communicate with us, we'd love volunteers to help us. We have a beautiful Latino community. We have a beautiful African-American community. We have a beautiful white community. We have a beautiful immigrant community. And I got to tell you, one of the biggest communities that's growing out there is the West African community. You know, we just have a tremendous amount of diversity in West Harlem, and we want them all to join us, and we want to let them know that, you know, we're going to win this race. And I'm looking forward to being the next councilman of the 7th District.
And you'll be the first American, Arab American.
I would be. I would be the first Arab American, I believe, in the New York City Council's history, and it's a tremendous amount of pride for Arabs around the country, I think. So this is something that's very special, and that's not why I'm running. I'm not running to be the first of anything. I'm running because I've been working pro bono for the best interest of my community for 15 years, and people have said to me, including Council Member Robert Jackson, who I would love to succeed, and I see as one of my political heroes, they said to me, Ziad, you got to run, man, because we need your expertise. We need your ability to create jobs, to help people, and we know that your heart is with the kids, with trying to create a better education, a future, and we know that you know how the people who have it the roughest feel, because you know that you felt that way before, and we need you in there to help us take it to another level.
Well, on that note, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Have a blessed evening.
And, could you one more time give your website, because I think you broke up a little.
Sure.
Before.
It's info at ZiadRamadan2013.com. That's I-N-F-O at ZiadRamadan2013.com. We'd love all your help.
There you go. And thank you again for being my guest, Ramadan.
Thank you so much, Deidre.
And this is Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. As always, I'm your host, Deidre Shuler. And I want to thank my listeners for making my topic topically yours. Good night, all.
Would you call for me? I'm out of